from the island of Corfu and brought to you daily on amazing affiliates Max Sports Channels, Talk Superstation, Cosmic Radio, Armed Forces Radio, and the Armed Forces Radio Network. This is The Phil Nason Show. Welcome to The Phil Nason Show, the international sports show with a local sports radio flavor. I'm Phil Nason, and I'm the host of this daily sports show, and I'd like to wish you a pleasant day from wherever you take the time to listen. I have a great show planned for you today. Later on, Blogging Mets' Mark Berman and I will talk about and interact with a couple of articles about the New York Mets and in the postseason, in the winter season, and we'll talk about that. But up first, beginning tonight, Game 1 of the World Series between the St. Louis Cardinals and the Boston Red Sox. It's the fourth time that these two great franchises have met up in the World Series. And here to talk all about that, please welcome from AthleticsNation.com, Mr. Alex Hall to the show. Alex, what's up, dude? Welcome to the show. A little different for us tonight, eh?
I've made a very important decision. Let's go Cardinals.
There you go. You like the Cardinals, eh?
Yeah. I can't hate the Cardinals. I just got nothing against them. I think a lot of people share that viewpoint. I read a thing on SB Nation just yesterday writing about, were the Cardinals the new Yankees? Not based on how they run their franchise, but based on the success, on the way that they just consistently find themselves in the playoffs each year, winning, you know, a bunch of championships, not as many as the Yankees, but they're a very comfortable number two all time in number of World Series titles. They're always good. They might beat up on a team like the Rangers a couple of years ago, where Rangers fans had never seen a world title before, and the Cardinals snatched it away at the last second. I guess you could dislike them for that, maybe. Or showing up as an 83-win team and winning a World Series. But in the end, it's impossible for me to hate the Cardinals. There's nothing bad about them. They develop almost all of their own players. Someone in the comments section of that article had gone through and figured that only five players on the entire postseason roster had ever played for another major league team. This is the epitome of a homegrown team. This is what A's fans like to think the A's are. They develop their own players. They might pay to lock up their own players and keep them long term, but they're not out there pillaging other franchises trying to buy championships. Not to say that every other team does that, but there are a few. That's certainly what the Dodgers have just done. It's what the Yankees have tried to do for the last 10 years, and it's sort of what the Red Sox do as well. So, as an A's fan, as a guy who appreciates the efficiently run franchise, the homegrown players, I got to go with the Cardinals.
You know, I like the Cardinals. They have this thing. I had some guys on from Pitchers Hit 8th, and they are a Cardinals blog outside of SB Nation, which is probably why they're not on the show, only because I usually just work with SB Nation people, as you know. But they talked about this thing called the Cardinal Way, and it starts from the time they enter the organization. They're taught what they're expected of and what they're to do every single night, both on and off the field. So when these young fellas get the opportunity to make it to the majors, there's nothing to chance. They know what they're expected to do, and they get up there and do it. And you're right. They don't buy championships. They grow their own pretty much, and they smoke their own, really. They keep their guys in the organization, and people don't usually want to leave. Okay, Albert Pujols is the main exception to that rule, but then, well, they didn't really try that hard to keep him either. And I like the Cardinals, and I like the Cardinals' way. It's just they're a spectacular organization, and Boston is a good organization too, a great organization. But the Cardinals are an organization that you seldom find a lot of hatred for.
And what fascinates me about them is it's almost like they have the cheat codes to success in baseball. Like, everything that they do just seems to turn to gold. No matter if the decision is risky or seems very sensible or whatever, whatever they touch, they just have the baseball Midas touch. Whether that means drafting Pujols in the mid to late rounds and having him turn into a superstar, or after 10 years of fantastic service and being a fan favorite, letting him go for the bigger contract and then watching him tank on another team. Maybe it means having Adam Wainwright go down for the year with surgery. But it doesn't stop you because instead Chris Carpenter, whose career was supposed to be over, shows back up and pitches you through to another World Series. Or maybe it's pulling all of these nondescript prospects, guys like Alan Craig, maybe a John Jay, or someone like that, and having them suddenly pan out into solid above average major leaguers, taking Matt Carpenter and moving him to second just because and having him do really, really well there. Whatever they do, every player they touch suddenly plays his best. And I wish I knew how they did that, because I wish that the A's could do that. They certainly get a lot out of a lot of nondescript players, but they have a lot of things go wrong too, and a lot of guys who maybe don't pan out. So those Cardinals, they just find a way to get it done. And there is one other thing about that team that I would like to address, and it's something I've read a little bit about the last couple of days. There is this label that they've gotten, and that is having the best fans in baseball. That's something that national writers and commentators love to talk about, how they have the best fans in baseball. And what I found out recently is that a lot of real Cardinals fans really don't like that label. They find it to be kind of pretentious. They find it to be something that someone else said about them. And what happens, it's weird, is people get so inundated with this best fans in baseball label, they start to resent these pretentious Cardinals fans who think they're so incredible. But if you actually go and ask the Cardinals fans themselves, they say, best fans in baseball? That was your words, not mine. I never said that. Yeah, sure, we're great. We're just fans like anyone else. And it's one of these labels that has been given to them externally, and maybe they don't do anything to fight it, but at the same time, it's not something that they have labeled themselves, and it's weird how they end up taking guff for it when really they're like, what? We didn't say that. Someone else said that about us. What are we supposed to do?
Well, that's exactly right, and they are great. They're not pretentious at all. That's the great thing about them. Like, if you do anything in the NBA and you talk about the Miami Heat, they're going to burn your house down, they being those bandwagon jumping fans. But the Cardinals fans are a great fan base. Boston Red Sox fans are very vocal. And it's going to be an interesting series, no doubt about it. But when you talk about why they do the things that they do, it's back to that Cardinal way. When you get called up to the major leagues, you play where they tell you and you succeed or you leave. It's all up to you. And that's why the Cardinals are such a great organization. And the Oakland A's ain't that far behind, dude, because it's sort of the same thing. A whole bunch of interchangeable parts. When one person goes down, you've got another guy, major league ready in AAA, to take their place. And, you know, when you talk about the Cardinals, we're going to talk about the pitching in a minute here. Don't forget that Jake Westbrook and Chris Carpenter both were injured this year. You lose two guys like those two fellas, and life doesn't look good. But the pitching matchups, Alex, are amazing. And game one, you've got Adam Wainwright and John Lester. John Lester is one of those guys who a lot of people, including me, weren't too high on at the beginning of the year, but he has come through. And then you've got this rookie phenom who's not even on the depth chart still, Michael Wacha, taking on John Lackey, another one who a lot of people wrote off. Clay Buchholz from the Red Sox, and you have Joe Kelly, who's not a household name. And then Jake Peavy, the trade that they made mid-season at the trade deadline, taking on Lance Lynn. What do you like about the St. Louis Cardinals pitching staff, their starters?
I like that they remind me a little bit of the A's staff, with the exception maybe of Wainwright, because the A's don't have anyone like that. They are guys who have been developed by the team. In a couple of cases, they were not top prospects. They're just guys who performed well, kept performing well, got to the majors, and somehow kept performing well. Reminds me of guys like A.J. Griffin and Dan Straley and Tommy Malone. I don't know that much about Kelly and Lynn, but I'm pretty sure they were not supposed to be huge top prospects. I believe Wacha was. But when I look at these matchups, and it's tough to pick a baseball game based on the pitching matchup, but when I look at Wainwright-Lester, no disrespect to Lester, but Wainwright is probably the best pitcher in this series, and it's tough to see anyone on the Red Sox beating him. Michael Wacha is the hottest pitcher in baseball right now. The guy is bonkers, out of his mind. I think he's given up just a couple of runs in the entire postseason so far. In fact, just one run, I believe. almost threw a no-hitter in his first playoff start. Unbelievable. Now, John Lackey has also been pitching pretty well in this postseason, but who in their right mind is going to pick against Waka right now? And so now what you've got is the first two games in the bag in Boston. What if the Cardinals win both of those? Are we going to start talking about a 4 or 5-game series here if that happens? I don't know. And then you've got, Kelly and Buchholz. Well, the obvious thing is to pick Buchholz there, but, you know, he's been struggling a little bit in the playoffs so far. He hasn't been at the top of his game. And at some point, he's going to come up with a good start. And so maybe it will be in this World Series. But, you might be talking about a quick 3-0 deficit here. But as much as we've lauded the Cardinals so far, there are also some things that I like about this Red Sox team. And it's something that's really gone back for the last 10-plus years, and that is how similar, and this is going to sound weird, but how similar they always seem to be to A's teams. Of course, you've got the huge discrepancy in payroll, and that affects which players and the quality of stars that they get. But the fundamental strategies seem to be sometimes very similar. Of course, when you had Moneyball, the first version of Moneyball in the early parts of the last decade, 2002, 2004, that kind of time, and you have the A's going for some of these new skills, like on base percentage, looking for power hitters, going big on starting pitching, these kinds of things. And as was well documented in both the book and the film, John Henry, the Red Sox owner, really liked what he was hearing, tried to hire Billy Beane, couldn't get him, got some other guys like him instead, and used some of those Moneyball strategies. And again, I'm talking about the first permutation of Moneyball, the on-base percentage version. He used those strategies, those undervalued strategies, and took it immediately to a World Series championship. And then I look at this current team, and what I see is a previously front-loaded team that unloaded a couple of those sort of top-heavy contracts and instead replaced them with depth, which is so much like what the A's did this year. They turned, you know, Adrian Gonzalez and Carl Crawford and Josh Beckett, not just in the trade itself, but in clearing those salaries, allowed them to go get guys like Mike Napoli and Shane Victorino and Johnny Gomes and Stephen Drew, and plug up all these holes that they had with really solid above-average players, to the point where when I look up and down their lineup, there's not really a big weakness. There's not a hole. Of course, they do have a couple of stars, but even then, they don't have one Pujols or one Cabrera that's the centerpiece of that team. You know, they've got David Ortiz. He's getting a little on in years, but he's still very good. And you've got guys like Pedroia and Ellsbury, who on their own maybe aren't a huge MVP. Well, of course, Pedroia's won before and Ellsbury nearly did. But the point is, they aren't the singular star on that team. They are all very solid 5 or 6-win players that fit together into a greater whole and whose abilities complement each other very well. And I just look at the 2013 A's team and how similarly constructed they each are despite the differences in payroll. This Red Sox team is not as star-heavy as you would expect them to be, given how much money they usually spend and how they're usually in on all the big free agents and all the big trades. There's something about that that impresses me, and although I'm not going to be rooting for them right now, as much as it'll kill me to root against Johnny Gomes, who is still a huge favorite in Oakland, we love that guy. I'd love to see him get a ring, but there's something about the way these Red Sox teams are constructed that rubs me the right way, I guess.
Sounds good. Let's get back to the pitching, though. When you talk about these matchups and there's a possibility it could go 5 games, let's not forget that last week people were talking about Zach Greinke and Clayton Kershaw, who are two of the best around, too, and they got shellacked. I mean, so I don't know. You know, I'll tell you what, Boston has this funny way of scoring runs and getting a big hit. But this pitching staff, the matchups, if you look at the starters on both teams, and I believe Joe Kelly was probably the only one of this quartet of starters who wasn't a big, highly rated prospect. I think Lance Lynn was really rated like in the top 5 or so.
He was a first round pick. Lance Lynn was a first round pick. You're right.
Yeah, Shelby Miller is another one. He's not. He's just injured and has had issues. But this is a great pitching staff, man. This starting pitching staff is good. Boston's is good too. You know, they've got Ryan Dempster. They picked up Ryan Dempster in the offseason thinking that they could get something for him and go somewhere with him, and he's gone nowhere. He's had a tough year all the way around. So you're looking at two teams, four-man rotations. You got to almost give the edge because, like you said, Michael Walker is the hottest pitcher on the planet, and Adam Wainwright ain't far behind him. You almost have to give the edge to the St. Louis Cardinals, correct?
I mean, I do. And of course, as you're saying, you never know what's going to happen. I think of the last couple of years, I think of Cliff Lee just marching through the playoffs with the Rangers and the previous couple of years with the Phillies before that. And people are talking about if he's the best playoff pitcher of all time. And then he shows up in the World Series against the Giants and they hit a bunch of homers off him and he loses. And then I think of Justin Verlander last year sweeping through everybody in the playoffs. And then he gets to the World Series and the Giants torch him and he loses. And it's like, what can I believe? I have all these numbers and all these trends and all this momentum, and then you get to the next series and suddenly everything changes, and that's why baseball is so difficult to predict. And so Waka could show up in Fenway Park and get shellacked, and everyone will say, huh, well, he's a rookie. I guess we should have seen that coming. Makes it very difficult to predict, but at the same time, I mean, it's foolish not to go with the percentages here and say the hottest pitcher in baseball is going to remain very, very hot. It's not like he's been beating poor competition. I mean, he just shut down some pretty good lineups. So, tough to say, but looking at the pitching matchups and also a little bit of the lineups, I have to think that the Cardinals have the upper hand here, even though Boston has home field advantage.
At least at the starting level they do, but in the bullpen, nobody. I'll tell you what, Koji Uehara from Boston is amazing. This guy is something else, boy. He saved all five of their games. This guy's on a roll, man. And he wasn't even supposed to make the squad this year. But when Hanrahan went down, another guy that they had picked up in free agency hoping that he would be their closer when he got hurt, Uehara just took over. And on the other side of the coin, you've got Trevor Rosenthal. He has three saves so far in the playoffs. Edward Mujica, I think he's just fallen out of favor. So I guess if I'm going to choose which bullpen to look at, I have to say, if it's a close game in the ninth inning, it's got to go to Boston, don't you?
They both have a lot of really strong relievers. Bullpens fluctuate so much that it almost seems pointless to try to guess who's going to be the better one. Even Mariano Rivera blew a save in Game 7 of the World Series. They work in such small sample sizes. The Red Sox kind of put together their pen on the fly here since they thought they were going to have Andrew Bailey. That didn't work out so well. They thought they were going to have Joel Hanrahan. That didn't work out so well. And now Uehara has shown up and turned out to be better than both of them were ever supposed to be. On the Cardinals side, same kind of mix and match, but Rosenthal's been very good. They have a few other lesser names in there who have really been impressive both in the season and in the postseason. Cardinals bullpen only gave up 3 runs in the NLCS. That's pretty solid. But I'll tell you what, the X factor here for me is Carlos Beltran. He's never been to a World Series before, and I'm not really sure why, because I'll tell you, he is one of the best postseason players in the history of baseball. If you take the list of postseason OPS, hitters that have put up the highest OPS in their postseason careers, and you set it to a minimum of even just 60 plate appearances, Beltran is third all-time on that list. And the two names above him are Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig. In the history of baseball, in the history of the playoffs, those are the only two players to get any kind of substantial playing time. And I'm saying 60 plate appearances. That's not very much. Those are the only two players who have a higher OPS than Beltran in their postseason careers, Ruth and Gehrig. That's pretty impressive. Then you look down at where that OPS comes from, and you see the list of postseason home runs. Now, Beltran only ranks 8th on that list with 16, but he's done that in just under 200 plate appearances. And when you look up the list of the guys ahead of him, you have Manny Ramirez is ahead of him with 500 plate appearances. Bernie Williams with almost 550. Derek Jeter's had over 700 plate appearances in the playoffs. The closest thing you find is Jim Thome and Mickey Mantle, who are at least within 100 plate appearances of Beltran. But just in terms of pure slugging, almost nobody in the history of baseball can touch Carlos Beltran in the playoffs. Now, of course, again, we're talking small samples, not necessarily a sustainable thing. I don't really believe in clutch hitting, but I do believe that Beltran is a very, very, very good hitter, and I can't deny that he has come up very big when it has mattered in the playoffs. I looked through at some of his stats recently. This was entering the NLCS, so this is not counting what just happened against the Dodgers. He had played in 42 postseason games about halfway through that NLCS. He'd recorded at least one hit in 31 of those 42 games. He reached base at least once in 36 of those games. So again, 36 out of 42 playoff games Carlos Beltran has played in his career, he's reached base. Scored at least one run in 27 of those games. He scored, through his first 41 postseason games, he scored 42 runs. So even when his team is losing, Beltran is producing. He might go cold for one game here or there, but overall, he's going to be one of your best players in the playoffs, and he's very likely going to be the best hitter in the series. When you have an X factor like that, and of course, David Ortiz has been no slouch in his playoff career either, but when you have a guy like that who is capable of taking over a postseason series, and he does share the record for most home runs in a single postseason, he did that in 2004 without even making the World Series. Beltran, to me, is a very big factor in picking the Cardinals because it's tough to pick against a guy with that kind of track record.
Yep, you're right about that. There's a couple more relievers that we want to give some credit to, though, first. Mm-hmm. Carlos Martinez and Kevin Segrist, Seth Maness, and Randy Chody, they've all done great jobs for St. Louis and Boston. Gee whiz. Craig Breslow's pitched well, and Junichi Tazawa has pitched well. Big names. But anyway, we got this offensive threat with the boss or with the St. Louis Cardinals. And what you have, you know, the thing is about the Cardinals is they hit with runners in scoring position. I've never seen a team do that from top to bottom the way they have. And that to me tells me a lot right there. These guys know how to get runs manufactured. I agree with all the sentiments you said about Beltran. He's one of my favorite players. The thing with St. Louis, though, the star of that team, and he hasn't even gotten going yet, is Matt Carpenter. Matt Carpenter is an MVP candidate, and he needs to get that bat going. They need him. Yadier Molina is another one for St. Louis. Matt Holliday is hitting the ball pretty good. You know, when you look at the Cardinals, too, you look at a lot of small ball. They'll hit the big bomb occasionally, but it's a lot of small ball. John Jay, Pete Kosma has gotten it done a little bit in the playoffs. David Fries hasn't done much, but I look for him to have a big World Series. And then you have Boston, dude. I mean, Boston's amazing, too. These guys don't – they're not the biggest hitters in the world, but Xander Bogaerts – he's batted 500 so far in the playoffs.
It's funny to me that you're mentioning that the Cardinals have some cold hitters ready to break out because the Red Sox do as well. David Ortiz went 2-for-22 against the Tigers. Shane Victorino went 3-for-24 against the Tigers. Now, granted, each one of them hit a clutch late inning grand slam to change a game, which, I mean, it's great to have that clutch hitting, but you can't count on getting the big hit at the big time like that. It's not always going to work out. If that's your game plan, you know, it's like a basketball team relying on three-pointers. Eventually, that's going to run dry, and you're not going to get it. But there's two of their biggest players right there who really didn't do anything. You know, Stephen Drew went 1-for-20. So the Red Sox also have some guys ready to break out in this World Series.
Exactly. This is going to be interesting. I tell you what, the keys for Boston is our Mike Napoli. He's had a pretty good playoff run. Dustin Pedroia needs to get her going. Daniel Nava as well. And, of course, you know, we always talk about David Ortiz, Big Papi. Those are the keys there. For the Cardinals, I just named them. It should be an interesting series. There's no doubt about that. And when we talk about dead bats with the Boston Red Sox, let's not forget who they played against.
That's
you know,
true.
The Tigers, their pitching staff is no slouch, as you fully know.
One thing about Napoli, though, is that John Farrell, the manager, has already said David Ortiz is going to get some time at first base when the series shifts to St. Louis. I don't know if that means all three games, but I bet you it means at least two of them. And that's going to cost Napoli at bats. So he might be able to contribute in Boston or as a pinch hitter, almost certainly as a pinch hitter in St. Louis, but he's not going to start every game. So he's going to be spending a bit of time on the bench.
Unless he catches.
He's not going to catch.
You never know.
No way.
You never know. You know, he did a good job in Texas.
Yeah. Yeah, a couple of years ago. They already got two good catchers. They're fine with Salty Lamacchia and Ross. Those two guys will be fine. I'd rather have Napoli as the late inning. I mean, you know, you're playing in an NL ballpark. You're going to have a couple of pinch hitters. You're going to pinch hit for a pitcher or someone here or there. Napoli is a fantastic bat to have off the bench. I think that's the best way to use him if he's not starting at first.
Yeah, that's a good point. But you never know. I tell you what. The World Series is always a place for inventions. In 1968, Mayo Smith from the Detroit Tigers wanted extra offense, so he needed Jim Northrup in the lineup, so he put him out in center field, and he brought Mickey Stanley in from center field to play shortstop, and they defeated the St. Louis Cardinals, I believe. Anyway, Alex, we've got 30 seconds. Who you got? Give us a prediction for this thing.
I have Cardinals in 6. I'd like to say 5, but that's a little bit too bold for me. I'm going to give the Red Sox enough credit that they're not going to get, you know, they're not going to get nearly swept. They'll win a couple, but the Cardinals are going to take this one comfortably. It's going to be 6 games.
I got the Cardinals in 5. Their offense is too much. They're going to have a field day on these pitchers. They're going to score a lot of runs, and they're going to have a good time. And I'm going to even go as far as to say the MVP for the World Series will be Carlos Beltran.
I was going to say the same thing, and I'm sure that most pundits everywhere are saying the same thing, which makes it less fun of a guess, but how can I go against Beltran?
You can. Anyway, great stuff tonight, Alex. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks a lot, Phil.
All right, that was Alex Hall. You can find him at athleticsnation.com. Coming up next, Mark Berman from bloggingmets.com will be here to talk all about the hopeful offseason moves, and we'll interact with a couple of articles that are floating around the New York Mets blogosphere. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think it probably comes from porn as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Talk radio. Bend over, baby. That was great.
Cosmic Music, 24/7 on CosmicRadio.com.
CosmicRadio.com.
Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at AridiHotel.com or email them at reservations@AridiHotel.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m.
special programming on the weekends, and in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show, and joining me to talk New York Mets baseball, please welcome from BloggingMets.com, my friend Mark Berman to the show. Mark, how you doing, dude?
I'm good, and may I mention it's the new and improved Blogging Mets because I revamped the whole website.
This is what I was about to say. Bravo. This looked, you know what, when I went over there, I thought, I'm at the wrong site. Nice job.
Thanks.
In the Mets colors, pretty much.
Yeah, I decided just it was time. It was 4 years that I've had the blog, and I figured I would kind of revamp things and it looks a little cleaner. I'm going to have a logo design for the header, so that should change hopefully soon. But yeah, I like it. I think it looks more professional, looks less, I think a little less of a blog. A little.
Yeah, because a blog is a good thing.
Yeah.
But you dumped the discus, eh?
Yeah, I didn't dump it more than it got dumped because when I switched over, it kind of didn't translate into this new theme. So I guess I'm not using it.
Yeah, well, discus is a whatever. It is interesting, but it is very nice design. Now you did this yourself, right?
It's a WordPress design.
Okay.
You know, they offer the theme, so I picked this one, and I was able to make some changes, colors and whatnot, and hopefully that when I get the new logo, it'll be more of a Mets branding. Thing, because right now you look at it, you don't really get any Mets from it, but hopefully when I can put the logo in, it'll be good.
Yes, it'll be good. It'll match the content then.
Yes.
Absolutely it will. Now, little news outside the Mets sphere of things. Tim Lincecum re-signed with the San Francisco Giants. Sorry, Mets fans. Tim Lincecum is not coming to New York.
Yeah, I saw that. It's not a shock. I mean, he's been there his whole career. He seemed happy there. They didn't announce terms yet, did they?
I think it's 2 years and $35 million.
Oh, is it 35? Okay, I saw 2 years when I first saw that they hadn't announced terms. Oh, yeah, I'm seeing 35, yeah. You know, I mean, that's actually a pay cut for him. He was making like $22 million this year. But that's fair, considering he's been kind of not great the past 2 years. I'm kind of surprised he got that much. I thought he would get closer to 30 for the 2 years, but the Giants took care of him. So good for him, good for the Giants. I think he's going to bounce back.
Absolutely. I agree with you. That was a foregone conclusion. You know, more and more teams are trying to sign these guys, get it all done so there's no drama in the offseason, and they have their pitching staff in place, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
If they want to make a trade, well, they've already got him locked in. People know how much he's going to get. There's no guessing, no whatever. It's all good. And congratulations to the dude, man.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, that's big money for a guy who hasn't pitched very well the last couple of years.
Yeah, and he took some chances. When he was, you know, at his height, I think the Giants wanted to sign him to a long-term contract, and he didn't want to do it. He signed for like 2 years. But
That's his MO. He only signs for 2 years. But I think he got paid more for that no-hitter.
Yeah. But, yeah, he probably could have gotten, you know, $80, $90 million contract a couple of years ago, and he didn't take it. And it looks like he's going to be smart because he got like $45 million on the other contract, something like that. $40 million. He's got another 35 here. If he gets back up, you know, can pitch the way he was pitching, he can sign another 5-year contract for, you know, $125 million probably.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He'll be all right. I wouldn't worry about it, and I don't think he does either.
Yeah, me either.
I don't think he cares. He's got a lot of money, and like you said, he's been there for a long time. His whole career, he's happy there, and he can just keep racking it up.
Mm-hmm.
Now he pitches 2 great years, and he's going to break the bank.
Yeah.
I'll say Lincecum is back, and that'll be the end of it. Good for him.
Yep.
Good for him. And sorry, Mets fans. I know y'all were pulling for that free agent signing, but that was never going to happen.
No, no. I mean, I don't think Alderson is going to spend $17 million on any player, let alone a pitcher. And actually, he shouldn't spend that much on a pitcher because the Mets have strong pitching. There's no reason to go out there and spend that kind of money on a pitcher, considering what they have. I mean, they're not going to have Harvey next year, but it's just that it would not have been a good investment.
And speaking of Matt Harvey,
yes.
And by the way, I don't think Sandy Alderson is going to spend $17 million total this year, no matter what.
Yeah, I try not to think about that.
Yeah, anyway, Matt Harvey had surgery, and it was supposedly successful. We've heard these kind of things before.
Yeah.
But that's a good thing. So look for him around the middle of 2015.
Well, hopefully it'll be the start of 2015. Because usually the rehab time is a year, which would be next December, so, which means he should be okay for 2015, I would think.
Yeah, but will he be ready to pitch in the majors, though? That's the problem. You know, sometimes it takes a while.
He should be. I mean, if he's fully recovered by next December and he, you know, throw some simulated games and he has spring training, he should be good for the beginning of 2015. But who's
let's hope.
Yeah.
I have no hope when it comes to Mets and surgeries and injuries and what have you.
Yeah.
I think it's the medical staff for the New York Mets is a joke. Not this guy who did the surgery, but he's not going to be too involved in the rehab process.
Well, let's hope he's at least advising Harvey for the rehab process. I mean, you know, I'm sure he knows more about the rehab process than anybody else because he invented the surgery. So let's hope he's involved somehow. If the Mets are just taking care of rehab, then yeah, that's going to be bad. But I think Harvey seems like he's smart enough to know, you know, I got to go to outside doctors because the Mets doctors are just terrible.
Yeah, and I think if he's not smart enough, the Russian girlfriend he has, she's probably very clever. And his agent is probably no dummy either.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. Anyway, speaking of, well, I shouldn't say dummies. I was over at Mets Blog yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Because I was looking for something to talk about in this show. It's not easy to talk about these things when there's a World Series happening. And great baseball is happening to even think about the New York Mets. But the show must go on. And they being Matt Cerrone, the lead writer, apparently, and the founder of Mets Blog, talked about the Blue Jays will want quality starting pitching. And then from my friend Ben Nicholson-Smith, who has been a guest on this show a couple times, from MLBTradeRumors.com, says here on October the 11th, Toronto may consider trading Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Reyes, and others this winter. Mm-hmm. And that's no big deal because we hear that all the time. The general manager from the Blue Jays, and this is quoting from the Mets blog, which is a quote from Ben Nicholson-Smith. So Matt Cerrone's playing middleman here, and we're on the outside looking in, I guess.
Yeah.
But change is on its way one way or another. It's just a question of how far the Blue Jays decide to go, says Alex Anthopoulos. Nice Greek name. But change is on the way. Now, this is what Matt Cerrone says, Mark. Mm-hmm. Bautista should intrigue Sandy Alderson. He's missed significant time the last 2 years due to injury, yet still hit 25 home runs each season, which is why I bet Anthopoulos toys with dealing him over the next few months. Bautista will earn $14 million each of the next two seasons with a team option for 2016. Mm-hmm. This is the doozy. The Mets have the talent to acquire him, I think. I mean, you think.
Yeah.
They don't have the talent to acquire him, man. Do they?
You know, it depends. I mean, these reports are just so speculative. The guy who wrote the thing today is that Nick Carfato from the Boston Globe. He writes such crap all year long. You ever read this guy?
Nope.
Okay, I don't read him. They use him a lot on MLB Trade Rumors, which I read all the time. And he just writes nonsense that I think he comes up with. A lot of stuff he comes up with. A lot of stuff about the Mets that are just ridiculous. So I don't trust anything this guy says. But if the Mets could get Jose Bautista, I would get him in a second. Even though he does have a little injury history, he's a big hitter, and the Mets need a big hitter. But I don't know if the Mets can have the talent to get him. Depends who they'd want to give up. Alderson has already said he doesn't like to trade pitching for hitting. So if he sticks to that, there's no way they can get Bautista because the Mets have nothing to offer. I mean, they can offer Daniel Murphy and Wilmer Flores, and they probably don't want Darno back. But I don't. If they're not going to trade pitching, they can't get anybody, especially someone like Bautista.
No, they're not going to get him at all, and that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
But Bautista, you know what? If I'm Alex Anthopoulos, I'm not going to want to trade with the Mets anymore.
Hey, it wasn't his fault that he got ripped off.
He should have known, you know, that a knuckleballer at his age, him being R.A. Dickey, not a good trade, especially when you trade your top prospect. But it is what it is. You know, they are pretty well set up at second base with Emilio Bonifacio. That he's a good one. Ryan Goins is all right, too. He's only 24, 25. So, you know, you've got that to consider. And Murphy is not the best second baseman in the world. So what are you going to do? You know, who do you give up for this type of player? You're looking at giving up a John Neese, maybe a Dylan G. More than likely, you're looking for a prospect. I don't know that they're going to get Syndergaard. Didn't Toronto actually trade Syndergaard?
Yeah, he was part of the Mets. He was part of the Dickey trade. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. I don't think you can get him. Honestly, I just don't see what the Toronto Blue Jays need.
Yeah.
That the New York Mets can fill.
True. And again, if the Mets are not willing to trade pitching, then they're not going to be able to make a trade probably with anybody.
And he's already said he's not going to get rid of Neese or G or Harvey.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I mean, obviously losing your ace for a year is devastating to the team, but it's even more devastating just planning-wise, because even if they were thinking about trading G, they really can't now. Because if you trade G, that leaves them with Neese and Wheeler, and that's it. And a couple of, and some untested people. So you need at least three, ideally five reliable stars, but you need at least three that you can count on, and those are the three.
Yep, and I'm not so sure you can count on them either.
I mean, you know, no one's a sure thing except for, you know, Justin Verlander and Clayton Kershaw, but they both lost in the playoffs. But, you know,
so they're not sure things either.
Yeah, but these three are the closest the Mets have to at least being somewhat of sure things and, you know, solid, reliable starters, you'd hope. But at some point, the Mets are going to have to trade some of these young guys because you can't have a rotation with eight starters in it. You know, if you have G and Neese, let's say going forward, you have G, Neese, Wheeler, Syndergaard, and Harvey. So those five. That means there's no room for Montero and DeGrom and Michael Fulmer and all these guys. So someone has to be traded. Or you have, you know, you just have to do it. So Alderson seems so afraid to make a trade that might backfire on him. But he's going to have to take a chance on something.
Syndergaard for Bautista.
I wouldn't trade Syndergaard. I mean, the reports about him are just, I mean, he sounds like he's better than Matt Harvey, if that's possible. So Syndergaard, I would hold on to him. I don't know a lot about Montero. And, you know, people are saying he's supposed to be good, but they're not as glowing as Syndergaard's reports.
Well, I read somewhere in the Mets blogosphere that Montero should be considered. Why isn't Montero considered a top prospect in the New York Mets organization? So there are people that are very high on him.
I thought he was a top prospect.
I mean, they're talking about big time in the top 15 of baseball.
Oh, baseball.
An actual top prospect, not a New York Mets top prospect.
I see.
Because if I signed with the Mets, I could be a top prospect within 2 months.
Good point.
At 48. Really?
Yeah.
Because that farm system sucks. So trading for Bautista, I probably wouldn't do it because I would be looking towards building a farm system in order to provide talent when these free agents that allegedly will be signed one day go down with injury, because you know that happens.
Yeah.
There is no one in the minor league system that is ready to just step in and perform at the highest level. And that's what's necessary for a winning baseball team. I mean, if you look at these teams that were in the championship series in both the National and American League, you've got guys who stepped in either in the beginning of the season, middle of the season, toward the end of the season, from the minors, stepped in because someone got injured or someone struggled or whatever and shine like a shining star. Michael Wacha being a perfect example of this. Mm-hmm. The Mets don't have anyone like that in their farm system. No one.
No, especially on offensively, they have nobody who can hit. I mean, they have Wilmer Flores, and he didn't set the world on fire when he came up. And that's all they have as far as position players. Who else is there?
Not much. No. You know, people, they throw around some names. I think people just looking for something to write, grab a name out of the hat. And I honestly don't see anything happening here. They Mets blog talked about Jared King, who played in Brooklyn this season. It's single A for you folks who don't follow the minor league system. He had one home run and a 365 OBP. Batted 266, 15 doubles in 63 games.
Yeah,
that's something to look forward to.
Yeah, I don't understand the. I'm not big on the draft. I don't really know all these prospects and stuff, but I don't understand Alderson's strategy, because what Billy Beane's strategy, he likes to take college players who are almost ready. And I assume that Alderson was the same way, or maybe that came from Alderson. Instead, he keeps picking high school players who are several years away from even coming close to being ready. You know, Matt Harvey was a college guy. He was in the majors in 2 years. This guy, Dominic Smith. Yeah, that's his name, right? The guy that you drafted in the first round this year?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. He's a high school kid. He's got all kind of potential, but it's going to be 4 years before he's ready.
Yeah, maybe. You know, don't forget there's a young fella in Washington who came up basically right out of high school.
Yeah, I mean, there's some that are just extraordinary, and Bryce Harper was. But overall,
but I don't see this kid as one of them.
No. And then what was the guy's name? Gavin Cecchini? Is that his name?
Well, I can't even remember.
I think he's the one who was from Nebraska or Wyoming or some one of these places. I didn't even have a high school team. He was playing on travel.
Oh, right. That's the kid from Casper, Wyoming.
Yeah. He was playing on travel teams. Never even played real organized ball, and they drafted him in the first round. So he's 7 years away probably. So I just don't understand what he's doing.
Well, it's Paul DePodesta is the amateur scouting development guy. Uh-huh. He's the president of player development and amateur scouting.
Right, because when he was the general manager, his teams, won many, many World Series.
He sucks.
Yeah.
He needs to be fired. I tell you what, Sandy Alderson needs to go.
Yeah, they talk about him being the next commissioner. And
Now, that would be a good place for him to
be. Yeah, that would be fine. I mean, he's a smart guy, I assume, so maybe he'd be good. But as long as he's away from the Mets, I don't care what he does.
Because he needs to go.
Yeah, but he's not going anywhere.
Well, he will go because he will be the new commissioner when Bud Selig steps down in 2014.
Well, I think Rob Manfred is going to get it.
Yeah, well, we can keep our fingers crossed. If you're near a Greek Orthodox church, you people out there, stop by and light a candle. We want to see Sandy Alderson get sacked.
Yeah, unfortunately. I do anyway. Yeah. Oh, no, so do I, but it's not going to happen.
We need to see many things with the Mets. I went and made my yearly pilgrimage to St. Spiridon's Church last week, and I lit a candle in hopes that at least three people from the Mets organization would be gone by the end of 2014.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't go into a church. I'm sorry.
What's that?
I can't go into a church, so I apologize.
Well, I didn't actually go in.
Oh.
I went to – because they have the candles and everything on the outside too.
Ah.
Because if there's a hole in the roof, I know I don't want to go in.
Yeah. And actually –
if the lightning strikes, yowza.
Okay. Yeah, and as a Jew, I think my foreskin grows back if I go into a church, something like that.
Yeah, okay. That's fair enough. Yeah, I heard that. It's not the horns underneath your hat that are the issue.
No.
It's the foreskin
issue.
Exactly. Okay. Just curious. But or I wanted to set that straight.
Yeah, that's fine.
Anyway, I don't know what these people are thinking. They're all out there speculating. They're talking about signing Shin Soo Chu, and I don't think that's going to happen, although I would love to see it.
Yeah.
Oh, my own. Where do these people come up with some of these things? But honestly, there needs to be some big changes, and it has to start at the bottom.
Meaning, what's the bottom?
In an organization, when you build a house, you start with the foundation.
Well, I think
the foundation of any Major League Baseball team is its farm system.
Well, I think they've been attempting to rebuild that, and it is certainly better now than it was 3 years ago. But it's time for those fruits to, you know, whatever fruits do, to ripen. I don't know what fruits do. What about I'm mixing metaphors. I don't know what I'm doing. But it's not.
That's okay.
Yeah. It's just time to
see
that.
Here's the deal.
Okay.
Here's the deal with the minor league system. All of the teams are under 500 4 years ago.
Right.
Now only most of them. For the last 3 years since Paul DePodesta, and this according to Nautilus, the New York Mets have been below 500 overall in their minor league system. So what's the deal? Who's fixing what?
Well, I thought... Well, the AAA was above 500.
Okay, now they have the best record in minor league baseball, Paul DePodesta says. But you don't know who to believe.
Yeah. I mean, I think the minor league system is better, but, you know, again, it's time to see results at the major league level. It's been 3 years with these guys, and enough's enough. They have to start making changes, and they have to start winning. They don't have to win the World Series next year, but... at least be competitive and finish near 500. But yeah, major changes are needed at the major league level. They need at least four new players. And I just don't think they're going to do it. I think they're going to get maybe one. Maybe,
yeah, it's
maybe
gonna be
two.
Tough.
I think the first base is going to be the same. I think shortstop is going to be the same. I think they'll get definitely one new outfielder, maybe two new outfielders, and that's it. And that's the whole team right there. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope they end up getting four new players and turning over half the everyday lineup, because that's what's necessary.
There's a big issue there, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
One thing that you speculated about on your site today was the and this is because of from a tweet that ESPN's Buster Olney did regarding that the Royals are ready to talk about a deal for Billy Butler.
Yeah.
And the question you asked was, should the Mets be in the conversation? And I say no.
How come?
Because the guy can't play first base.
Is he that bad? I don't know a lot about him. I just know he can hit. I know he's a DH, you know, primarily. Is he that bad in the field?
He's that bad. Let me go look and see here just to back this up. Okay. I'm a fantasy baseball player, basically, but I can come up with some good stuff occasionally. Errors. He didn't make any errors this year.
Well, he played seven games, so.
Yeah, well, there you go. The most he made was in 2009. He made 10. But he's just not a very good first baseman. He doesn't have the range. He can't throw the ball at all. He's just a big bat, and he is a really big bat for an American League team because this is a DH.
Okay, then that's
He's already a DH at age 27.
Yeah. I wonder why the Royals – are trading him. If he's 27 years old, he had a breakout year in 2012, 313, 29 homers, 107 RBIs, and he regressed this year, 15 homers. So maybe they see that, you know, he's reached his peak. I don't know. But you always have to be skeptical when a team gives up on a player when they're still young, just like when the Diamondbacks seemed desperate to trade Justin Upton at 24 years old, which I thought was really weird. I don't know. I think if he can play first base at all, I would take a shot at him.
It's a big contract, though. What are you going to give for him? Ike Davis? You'll never get Ike Davis.
No, no.
What are you going
to
give for him?
It would have to
guy?
Be a decent prospect. I don't know.
Well, they would want a pitcher.
Probably.
Because they don't have a decent prospect for anywhere else, and they already have a third baseman, so... that takes Wilmer out of the equation. Let's see here. Let's see why they're trading him. Because they have a monster payroll that didn't work out.
Yeah. Yeah, $8 million is a lot for Kansas City.
That's a lot for a lot of people. It seems to be a lot for the New York Mets.
Right. See, the Mets would have to then, if they did want to go for a new first baseman, which is not, you know, not they seem to want to go with due to Davis and Satin. But if you can get a guy like James Loney for $6 million and no player, would you take him over Billy Butler, who you're paying $8 million, and plus you're giving up somebody?
I think I would take Loney. And I don't even like him, and I'll tell you why. Because I can sign him as a free agent.
Right.
And I don't lose anything.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I don't know that if Butler is the hitter from 2012, I would take him over a lot of players. But 15 homers, 289, James Loney can do that.
Maybe James Loney can.
Yeah. Well, he would do around there.
But here's the thing, he'll do better than what Ike Davis and Lucas Duda.
Yes.
And that other numbnut, what's his name? Josh Satin.
Yeah.
He'll do better than all three of them put together, and he'll play better defense. Loney's a decent defensive player.
Yeah.
And he'll become on the cheap.
Yeah. The Davis due to Satin is a recipe for disaster. That's a losing team right there. There's no way a team with any of those guys at first base is going to win.
Yep. And Sandy Alderson, you should have traded him when I told you to do it last year. But everybody in Metsville was against me then.
I know. I was also. I never, ever thought he would do this again this year and be far,
didn't
far
didn't I tell
worse.
You that he you sucked?
You did. I give you all the props.
Because you can see it in his swing. It was a big hitch. If he was a tennis player, I would tell him to hang up the gloves. Really, put the racket down and maybe become a teacher like me. Because his stroke is just upside down.
Yeah.
His left hand doesn't get through the strike zone very good. There's no power there. He was just basically a $3 million slap hitter this year.
Yeah, he was awful.
Awful. So, Loney or Butler, you decided you would rather have, depending on the situation.
If my choice was between the two of them, depending on who the Mets would have to give up. If they give up a minor prospect, I would take Butler. But if they had to give up, Montero or someone like that, then I would just take Loney.
Well, I'll tell you what, Kansas City's regretting giving up Will Myers.
I still don't understand that trade. They got two, average pitchers for someone who could be a superstar. If you're going to trade someone like Will Myers, you got to get a big-time pitcher, a can't-miss ace of the staff. And that was just a silly trade.
Well, you know what? Shields was supposed to be the big shot down there. But the problem is with Tampa Bay, they hit for him. And Kansas City didn't.
Yeah. I mean, Shields is good. He's a good, solid, number three pitcher, but he's not an ace.
He was an ace down in Tampa Bay.
Well, no, Price was still the ace.
But didn't Shields win Cy Young?
No.
A few years ago?
No, not at all. I'll look up his record, but no, he didn't win the Cy Young. You're thinking of, I don't know who you're thinking of. Johnny Shields, you're thinking of. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Let's see. He was third in the Cy Young in 2011.
Right, he had a really good year year, my mistake.
16-12, 2.82 ERA. Not 11 complete games and 4 shutouts. I mean, that a good year, but other than that, he's. And this year he had a good year, 13-9, 3.15 ERA. But, he's not an ace. He's very good, but not an ace. And the other guy, Wade Davis, I don't think he did anything this year.
No, he didn't do much. But anyway, great stuff tonight, Mark. Thanks for being on the show.
Are we done?
Yep.
Okay. See, we could always talk about the Mets. Wade Davis, 8-11, 5.32 ERA. He's terrible. Okay, goodbye.
Okay. Thanks. That was Mark Berman. You can find him at bloggingmets.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. Special thanks to Alex Hall and Mark Berman for being here today. Talk baseball. Tomorrow night we're going to have San Antonio Spurs hoops, Oklahoma City Thunder hoop, and Utah Jazz hoops. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly, thanks for listening. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.